Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
And welcome to No Chefs Allowed. I'm Megan O'Connor, and as always on Monday night, I am standing in my kitchen in Chicago and cooking with my sister, who is standing in her kitchen in Columbus, Ohio. Say hello, Trisha.
Hello. Welcome
to
the show, everyone. I'm good. I am literally standing. I was trying to think of how many times I've actually sat on this show, and it was only once during the rhubarb show where we made rhubarb tea, and then I got so tired I just sat down. Anyway, I digress. I'm excited for this show because I need the tips that we're going to get today, and you're probably going to make fun of me and say, yes, you do.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, we can all use tips, that's for sure, but something tells me I'm a little more in sync with these folks than you are.
Right, if we turn in our resume to these folks, you'd get the job. And I'd get an internship. Because I can make copies.
Because maybe a little more practice might be good.
Oh, practice.
Spoiler alert. Okay, so Trisha, tell us what's going on here, because these people are close by you. You've experienced what they're doing, and give us just a little sneak peek into the show today.
Well, it's kind of fun because we're on the heels of the meal sharing show, which was just a different, mealsharing.org was kind of a different way to share food with like-minded people, right?
Yeah.
Well, this show, we are featuring two girls from The Kitchen. It is a new concept in Columbus, Ohio, and basically, if you look at the website, it blurs the lines between patron and chef. Ooh. Which is very fortunate that the Blurred Line song came out at the same time. But
yeah, sure, that's the same song. I'm sure they're really, yeah.
It really does. So they've created this really cool space that's really inviting, and you come in, and they have a menu set out and different stations. I'm going to let her tell us about this in more detail, but different stations. And so everybody who's invited to the dinner party or signs up for it kind of finds a home at one of the stations, and it's participatory dining. So everyone who's there takes part in making the meal, and then everyone sits down at these great community tables and eats the meal together.
Oh, my God. I'm laughing right now because this is so the opposite of something my husband John would ever do. He's the kind of guy that when I took him to fondue, and he's like, why am I cooking my own meal? Like, at a restaurant. He wouldn't even squeeze. We went to this restaurant where you squeezed your own orange juice. He wouldn't do it. He's like, I'm not getting orange juice because I came to a restaurant. I'm not going to go squeeze it.
That is so John O'Connor.
There is no way. Sorry, folks, but John's not going to be coming to this place. He'd be
pretty
standing
soon he's
going to
be.
What the heck? Why am I? What? Why? I came to the restaurant. Why am I cooking?
Well, because that's true. He went to that, but pretty soon he's going to be like, what do you mean I have to lift this to my own mouth? Are you kidding me? I have to pick this up? I can't do it. Okay, so it's not for John.
It's not for John, but for everybody else, for the rest of the normal eating population.
Right. It's more based on the experience, well, and you're cooking great food, but it's an experience that you come together and cook communally with a group of people and then share it with a group of people. So like I said,
Do you bring all your friends, or you just show up and you cook with whoever you met there?
Both. You can make your own little dinner party. Like, let's say I took the whole staff of Columbus Soup and Bread over there.
The whole staff.
I have a lot of cooking to do. But you could formulate your own group and reserve the place, and they work with you on the menu and that kind of thing. But, you know, they go out and do all the grocery shopping. They have everything there, and then you can focus on, you know, cooking it and visiting and that kind of thing. Or they also have public events. So, you know, Chris and I could get on because my husband would go to something like this.
Yes.
And we could see what public meals they're doing. I guess that's probably the wrong word. But and sign up and end up going with strangers, you know, meeting strangers, which we're all into as well, which is kind of like the meal sharing thing where you, you dine with strangers. So, and then you leave new best friends.
You become your friend.
Yeah. You become hashtag BFF. So, yeah, it's a really interesting concept and it's really taking off in Columbus. I'm so happy for them, but I have to tell you the funniest thing about it, Megan.
What?
It's in the old space where Lauren had her wedding reception.
Our sister Lauren in 1988 in the midst of the drought.
Yes, where we were in that.
Shut up.
Taffeta with two-piece sleeves and an open back, and it was 104 degrees, and yep, it's that space. In fact, that space was a video store after Lauren's debacle.
Debacle, which is a 25-year marriage or whatever, more than that right now, by the way.
That part was
a little bit of a struggle for many, let's just say that. Not for her and her husband, but for the rest of us eating
for the rest
at 104 degrees with the air conditioning broken in July. Okay.
So it turned into a video store, and one time I was dating a guy who lived over there, and he was like, hey, let's go get a video. And we went into this space, and I was like, I feel like I've been here before.
And then you looked over to the corner and you saw your father singing Goodnight, Irene.
Oh, God.
Did you have a vision of that with Mike's father and brother or whatever it was singing Goodnight, Irene at the end of the night?
We're going to
You probably don't remember that.
No, there's a lot about that wedding I don't remember. And I will never live it down. How many years has it been? 25 years. But anyway.
Yeah.
So when I heard about them and it was their space, I was like, I have to come meet them. And I went over there and they graciously let me come in. And
picture wasn't still on the wall of the space with a big X through it that you weren't allowed back in after the wedding debacle of 1988.
Yeah, I was the debacle of the wedding of 1988. That's really what happened. But
I think the peach taffeta was the debacle. I mean, in hindsight, at the time, I'm not sure I liked it at the time, but in hindsight, it's worse.
We have Lauren, so we would wear anything.
Well, yeah.
But anyway, it's in that space, and they've created a really, really fabulous space that you want to be in. So it's very inviting.
I have to say, and we need to get her on the show here, but I have to say, I saw some of the pictures that Chris took. So you and the family did go, and I saw some of the pics, and they're beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, I was sitting in that same space, and I took a picture, and it didn't look like the picture that he took.
He's on a roll.
I know, man. That guy's good. He's got an eye. But the family went for a Taco Tuesday night. So they do the participatory dining, and then one night a week, Tuesdays, because Atticus was like, why is it on Tuesday? I'm like, because Taco Wednesday just doesn't sound so good. But they do Taco Tuesday, so you can go and get a feel for the space and, order tacos. They have different themes and that kind of thing. And it was great for the kids. We had a really great time. But I do laugh because Margo, our daughter, thinks it's really special to eat food on the coffee table. So, like, if you let her go to the coffee table and eat a snack while she's watching something on TV, that's, like, a really big deal. So we're at the kitchen, and they have this really cute lounge area that looks like a living room.
Yeah.
And Margaret took her meal over and ate on the coffee table, and I was like, we're eating at the kitchen, and she's eating at the living room. But it was fabulous. So they're going to come on, actually, and the way that their space came about, too, is that they're just excellent dinner party givers. So, Megan, you're probably really going to get along with them.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're good at dinner party.
I love a dinner party, yeah.
What's your favorite dinner party that you've ever given? Was I there?
Gosh, I don't know. I doubt you were here unless you count Thanksgivings, but those don't feel like dinner parties. Those feel like chaos gone, you know, chaos with turkey. But I usually have a dinner party for at Christmas time for friends. Although, I don't know. Maybe our first Horseradish Challenge dinner party with my BFF Liz and her husband. Now, that was a fun dinner party. I don't know. I can't pick. I can't pick. There are so many good ones and so many disasters, actually.
Well, let me tell you about one that I always remember over here was that I was convinced that these two people I knew should be married. So I had a dinner party because I needed them to meet because I wanted to stay friends with them. And I thought if I can get them married, there'll be a better chance that I get to stay friends with them, right?
So it was
completely selfish. But I threw a pizza contest dinner party. So everyone got paired up. And so this couple, who I thought for sure would get married, they were even paired up. And they were totally game. And so you had to come to the dinner party with, I had all the dough, but you had to come with your idea of what you were going to do to make your pizza. And then we had three judges come, and they, you know, because it was a big to-do. So we all made our pizza.
My goodness.
And yeah, it was way fun. But the funniest part of the whole thing is it got so hot in here, almost like Lauren's wedding, because the air conditioning couldn't keep up. And then I was so novice at dinner parties, and I was all concerned about love, that I realized we didn't have any napkins. Mm-hmm. And I turn around, and Chris is handing out washcloths. And that was the lowest of the low dinner party. When that moment happened, I was like, oh, this is just really bad. But the food was great. And unfortunately, they didn't get married, but I will never live down the washcloth incident.
Well, that makes a dinner party to remember. Let's face it. If it's perfect, no one really remembers.
Right. We'll all remember the washcloth incident.
Right.
On that note, I think we should go to break, and we can bring Anne from the kitchen back on, and she can give us some tips and tell us how to do it right.
All right.
How about that?
All right, folks, we'll be back in just a few minutes with No Chefs Allowed. Welcome back, everybody, to No Chefs Allowed. I'm Megan O'Connor in Chicago, and as always, I'm cooking up on Monday night with my sister Trisha, who's in Columbus, Ohio. And also in Columbus today, but not in Trisha's kitchen, is our guest, Anne Boninsigna. Anne, are you there?
I'm here. Hello.
Hello. Welcome to the show today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, you have such an interesting concept, and I really haven't seen it anywhere else, so I'm just going to dive right in and say, tell me what it is you've built.
Well, thank you. It is an interesting concept and one that's sometimes hard to explain, but I think we're getting a little bit better at it. Mostly this came out of a desire. My business partner, Jen Lindsay, and I, we love throwing dinner parties, and we love having friends come over and, you know, that process of cooking together and dining and, you know, having lots of bottles of wine and, you know, which I think lots of people do, and maybe some enjoy it more than others. But for us, lots of things in our lives changed, and we were at a point where, like, okay, what are we going to do next? And we kept coming back to the idea that we love doing that. And we thought, well, wouldn't it be fun to, like, change up the guest list every night? And so we put together this idea that if we created dinner party menus and invited people to register to come and cook with us, that would be something that was really fun for us. It's a fairly selfish concept, to be quite honest.
I think you just wanted to drink wine is what I'm thinking. I'm thinking you just wanted
fortunately, other people
to have wine
do it,
every night.
So
it's the job. You know, you have to.
I love it.
But I think the part that we have, the part that makes it, you know, successful, at least at this point, is that the parts people hate about dinner parties is, you know, the going to the grocery store and the cleaning your house and the putting all the stuff away you don't want your friends to see that you weave around your house all the time, and the cleaning up after everybody walks out the door and doesn't help you do the dishes. And so we've taken care of all of that. And so you really get to just enjoy the most fun part of it, which is the cooking and the dining.
So how is it? So everyone's participating. Is it like a cooking class? Do I learn something, or how does it differ from
Jen always says that you will learn nothing, which I don't think is exactly true, but it's not our main goal. The idea is not so much about learning something. It's about taking that time to sort of relax and enjoy the process of cooking versus get home from work, put dinner on the table, get kids into a bathtub, get everybody up for school. You know, just sort of the rush that we go through in our lives is, you know, if you sign up to come to a dinner party here, you're kind of guaranteed a few hours where you just get to enjoy the process process of cooking and dining and having a great conversation and maybe meeting somebody new. And if you learn something in that time, that's awesome. But again, it's not our goal to teach you anything. We don't even feel capable of teaching you anything except that maybe that you should take a little time to relax and enjoy food the way it should be enjoyed. So
you
also say, you know, a lot of times you learn something from the person you're cooking next to probably more than you would from us. A lot of people start to, it's a kind of funny, cooking with people is a pretty intimate experience, as it turns out, and they start to really open up about their what I call their food history. My grandmother used to make pierogies every Sunday afternoon, and we would, you know, package them up and take them home, and these people, not my grandmother, she didn't do that, but somebody's grandmother did, and they start to really share these stories about themselves. Now I'm making stuff up about myself to make it sound more exciting, my life.
No, I get it, though. So just by the act of cooking together, you're starting to learn things about the other person and about how they approach food that you didn't even really intend to learn.
Yeah.
You're saying. So tell me a little bit. Okay, so how does it work? Can you walk me through my night if I'm a guest?
Yeah. So the idea is that you reserve a spot. This is for our what we call our public dining events, which means that I create a menu, I put it on our website, you look at the calendar, and you say, oh, my gosh, Southern Charm dinner party. I love shrimp and grits. I'm going to go to that. I'm going to grab a couple of girlfriends, and we're going to go have a girls' night out, let's say. So you sign up online. You arrive here. We have prep carts throughout our space, and we preset those with all of the equipment and the ingredients and the recipe that you need to help create part of that multi-course dinner. It's usually a four-course dinner. Sometimes during the week we'll do ones that are, three courses that just kind of, so you're not here at 11 o'clock eating dinner on a Tuesday night or Wednesday night. So then we do a little overview, kind of get you acquainted with what the menu is, and then we kind of set you off cooking. And we like to let people self-select what they want to work on because, in all honesty, it's important that you be invested in what it is you're making so that it's a really good experience for you. This is all about the experience. Like I said, not so much about the learning, but the experience. So we want you to find something that either you feel is challenging because you love to cook or that you feel really comfortable with because you're not as confident of a cook. It's really fun to see people take something on, and you know, there's usually a person who says, oh, yeah, I don't really cook or I don't like to cook, and a lot of times they end up being the person who is the most passionate about it at the point that we ask them to sit down and dine together. So you just cook together. Everybody kind of works on one part of the recipe. So you're like in a cooking class, I think they take everybody is on the, you know, you take all the same steps as everybody else. Here, you're really just focused on one recipe. Or, for instance, last night we did a dinner party where the group rolled pasta together. So everybody kind of took a turn rolling pasta, but there was a group that made a cake and a group that did a salad. And so you might get to work on a couple of different things, and we encourage you to work or jump around as much as you would like, as long as, you know, the recipe is getting finished. You don't abandon it.
Right. How long does it take? Like, do you show up at 5 and you are out by 10? Or how do you?
Usually we say that it's 3.5 to 4 hours, and that's if people really kind of relax and get into it and they're not rushing themselves through the process just to get back out the door again. So you typically people arrive between 6:30. We have some cocktails, have some hors d'oeuvres. That always helps with getting people relaxed and acquainted with one another. And then we start your cooking, and usually the cooking process itself is somewhere between 1.5 to 2 hours, depending on how complex the menu is. We've done some that were really involved. We did a menu that was based off of Julia. So it was very much a Julia Child-inspired, heavy kind of French-influenced menu. That was a longer menu. I think that one was maybe closer, a little over 4 hours. But that's with dining. So.
Yeah, right.
That's cool.
Wow,
has anyone
got it
like
all together.
Oh, go ahead. Well, I was just curious if anyone's ever, like, jacked up the food.
Well, yes. Not very often.
Does anybody ever burn the rolls? That's what I want to know, Megan. Does anybody leave the rolls in when you sit down, and the next thing you know, you burn them?
You're like, wait, there were no rolls on this table. Oh, shit. Yeah. Jen says that it's cooking with training wheels. So we have basically carefully selected recipes and, you know, tweaked them to the point where for sure you're going to come out with a success. almost always. We have had a couple of instances. You know, we just opened in July, so we're still pretty new, and I'm imagining we'll add to this list here and there. But we have had a couple of instances where things didn't go quite as planned. We had a group in one night who was making a what was to be a pumpkin cupcake with a bourbon cream, bourbon buttercream icing, and somebody mistook powdered sugar for flour, so they were a flourless pumpkin cupcake.
It's very
delicious. I mean, it was like
sweet.
They created something brand new. It was so delicious. If you like poured it over ice cream or something, it would be just fantastic. But
you poured your cupcake over the ice cream. That was delicious.
All you had to do is pull out the story that my 11-year-old pulls out every time, because we were making lemon curd and lemon mousse the other day. And we didn't have the whipped cream chilled enough, and so it just wouldn't whip. And he made this thing, and it was kind of runny, and he called it a cookie dip. And he was like, he says this every time we mess up. You know, this is how they discovered chocolate chip cookies. Every time. So you can use that. I'll let him know that you might use that. This is how they
I might use that.
Cookies. Yeah. It puts a positive spin on it.
I think it's awesome. You should go into marketing.
Yeah. Oh, well, he might. Better sales. His other famous line, let me tell you what you want. Anyway, we digress. Okay, so tell us about, so we kind of know the dynamics, how long it's going to take, what I get to participate in, but how does it work with the people? Because I have to imagine these people every night are coming together who have never been a team before in this capacity.
Many of them have never even laid eyes on each other before. Although Columbus is a very funny city in that it's like a big city with a very small town feel to it. And mostly I think that comes out of the fact that almost every night you'll get people in who have not reserved together, and somehow within the first 20 minutes you'll figure out that they know each other or have a connection that's like closer than Kevin Bacon. I mean, like, it's pretty amazing every single night. Or we'll have dinner parties where these people reserve all on their own, and then everybody shows up in the room and we start kind of talking, and it turns out they're all doctors or they're all lawyers. It's very strange. So I spent a lot of time thinking about, is it the menu that I build? Is that how these people like were drawn to it with these similarities? So it's really interesting. I mean, I have a degree in sociology, so I think a part of it is just my love of sort of that study of people. But it is really interesting to see how the people, what they come in with, because we always say that we could cook the same thing every single night and it would be different because of the people in the room. I think that is what contributes to a great dinner party always. If you're throwing one at your house, obviously you got to kind of think about, okay, do these people have anything in common? Because otherwise it's really painful on the hostess. But
right.
Yeah, we always, and it's sort of, we call it a kind of cast of characters. There's always a group. Once they come together, these kind of characters emerge out of the people that are in the room. There's always a person who says, you know, I don't really cook, but I'll just, if anybody needs a glass of wine, I'll go and refill the wine. We call that person the wine.
I want to be that guy.
Yeah.
Oh, please, like, you could do that.
I'm going to
be like the top chef.
Oh,
getting in there.
But then there's the top chef person who's like, oh, you know, I cook all the time. I know, you know, and they want to throw out these like complicated like cooking terms to Jenna, like, do you know how to do this? And she's always like, yes, you know, I went to culinary school. I do know how to do that.
They try to one-up her.
You know, and they just like to show off their knowledge, which is awesome because this is a safe place to be able to come in and do that. And there's usually a guy who's like, you know, I don't really cook, but I grill. And so we let that guy kind of come in. And a lot of times Jen just does the grilling on her own because, you know, it's not the most exciting part of cooking, but there's always a guy like, I'll help you. And suddenly he's taking over. And there's
all about the comfort zones.
Yeah. And there's always somebody who's like a very type A person who's like, okay, and they're like dividing out tasks for everybody. And you can see the people at their station sort of staring at them like, wow, okay, I guess we're supposed to just follow her.
Yeah. I think maybe you should write a thesis on this, actually. I'm starting to think maybe there's a PhD in here for you and a very interesting book.
Well, I'm cracking up because as she described the griller, he was a boy, and then as she described like the taskmaster, she was a girl.
Yeah,
I know.
I can think of few instances where it gender-wise strayed from that. It's really funny. I think you're right. There's probably a great PhD thesis in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Calling all PhD candidates. Head over to the kitchen every night for the next 2 years, and you will have your thesis. Trust
me. It's almost like they could do. It's almost like you could do an opener to The Office every night, like where you could like do a little thing to music of the cast of characters every single night, and it would be different people, but it would be the same kind of personality.
Yeah, it'd be a terrific reality TV show.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that would be awesome. I want to come to every dinner party.
You
and then I'll take on a different role.
Pretty soon you are going
to
have your face with a big X in it at that location. What? What? You're just trying to get kicked out of that place again.
I like to get kicked out of places. Kicked out again. What are you referring to? Lauren's wedding?
Yes. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah,
oh
I was. Wait to kick her out. She's just a child. Okay.
What child? Well, let's this is so interesting. Let's take a break, actually. And I'm actually making some appetizers to go with this dinner party theme. And I just rolled up some bacon-wrapped dates, some with goat cheese and some with pecan. So I'm going to put those in the oven. But when we come back, Anne, I would love it for you to tell us what is the formula for a great dinner party. Does that sound great?
Great.
Good?
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, so let's take a quick break. I'll get my appetizer in the oven, and we'll be back with more No Chef Allowed. Welcome back to No Chefs Allowed. We're talking with Anne Bonansigna from The Kitchen here in Columbus, Ohio, that blurs the lines between patron and chef. Welcome back, Anne.
Hello.
You are a professional at giving dinner parties, and I am not. What are some tips to great dinner party gatherings?
Partly based on the business that we have, I think probably the number one thing that we recommend to people is to get your guests involved. I think it helps you out a lot. You know, when they walk in and say, hey, is there anything I can do to help? Don't say no. You know, although that's like the hostessy thing to do, I think it's great to say, yeah, do you mind like uncorking this wine? I mean, it doesn't even have to be like, yeah, can you make a filet mignon right now? It could be simple things for them. But also, when other guests arrive and they see somebody involved, there's that ability for them to kind of have a icebreaker. Is that how you chop the onion? I would chop it like this. And then, you know, hopefully it doesn't start a fight, but it's something they can kind of bond over, and then you've got your natural icebreaker there. I think the other thing is to not necessarily get so caught up in all the details of your dinner party, but to sort of pull in some fun things from your house. I think, you know, obviously Pinterest is really popular, all this DIY stuff, but I love like pulling in random things from around my house to use as part of the, like if I'm going to set everything up, like hors d'oeuvres on my kitchen table or something, to use the stuff that's around the house, because I think, again, it sort of is used as a conversation starter. So I think the hardest thing in dinner parties is making sure that everybody has a good introduction to each other that makes it so that they can carry on their own conversation, so you as the host isn't constantly like pulling that out of them.
Yeah.
From a food perspective, I think it's important that you I think it's important that you make a menu that you are comfortable with. And I will tell you now that I think it was Martha Stewart who said, never make something for the first time when you have guests coming over. And that is like my number one rule to break. And actually, we break it all the time here because most of the...
Okay. We got to stop there.
Uh-oh.
Because Megan and I are completely different on that. I almost always make a recipe for the first time when I have a dinner party.
Yeah.
What do you do, Meg?
We have a couple of tried and true things. I think if you can mix them in with stuff that you... Maybe you're trying for the first time. Your guess will be more forgiving because you've got something that's a for sure. But I think it's a great opportunity. I mean, unless you're inviting over people that you don't know terribly well, like maybe your partner's boss,
President of the United States, or you know, something like that. The Dalai Lama.
President Obama's. You might want to pick something you already know how to make for him.
I mean, here's my thing on that. If I'm going to put a dinner party together and invite people over, I guess it's not so much that I have to make sure it's perfect. I just like the idea of everything tasting good together. I have like a little mini obsession with that. And if I don't try something ahead of time, like Trisha, you know, knows that before Thanksgiving, I forced my poor family to taste like every side dish that I could potentially make, and we taste it beforehand to see if it's going to make it to the table. And but it's some of it's about technique. Can I pull this off? But more importantly for me, it's about the meal coming together and everything kind of fitting on the plate or on the table together cohesively. And for me, I like to have made it and understand the texture of it, the taste of it. Like, does it fit? Is it the right side dish for this, you know, beef bourguignon? Is it the right dessert for this, you know, is flan what I really should be doing? Whatever. That's where I come from on the making things ahead of time.
I think flan is never what you should be doing.
I made a flan. I had paella one night at a dinner party, and I made a flan. And actually, it was the first time I ever made it. Because it's just really, it takes a lot to do it. I mean, it took like 2 days. But I had a backup.
Oh, see, that is
me. In case I poured it upside down, in case I took it out of the mold and it became custard. Like,
and you realize that you used the powdered sugar instead of the flour. And then you just poured it over.
Right, and I didn't have any cookies to dip in it, right? It didn't become cookie dip or whatever. It frankly was perfection, which was lucky on my part. But yeah, I mean, there's something fun about a disaster at a dinner party, but not really.
I don't think I've ever had a complete disaster. Well, okay, I'll stop there then. I won't tell the real story. No, but besides one disaster where we did order pizza, other than that, I seem to be able to pull it off enough. But how do you do it, Anne, you've got a new group of people every time.
Yeah.
They're always making recipes they've never made before.
They are. You know, and it's funny. So part of the reason that I wanted to go into this business is I love putting menus together. So sort of listening to you talk about, I want to make sure these things go together. And for me, it's so much about just really cooking and eating a lot and just sort of trying lots
of
different things.
That's kind of your trial and error, not so much, yeah.
Yeah, not so much the specific recipe, but also just generally thinking about, okay, these flavors are in this dish, these flavors are in this dish, are those compatible flavors? Jenna and I have a book that we use on a daily basis called The Flavor Bible. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it or not. But it's a terrific resource if you're somebody who's just kind of getting into entertaining or just getting into, like, wanting to, like, maybe come up with your own recipes and or menus because it tells you all of the flavors that go together. So then you can be a little more, like, off the cuff with it. But here, no, I mean, we keep the phone number for the pizza place down the street on hand. I'm kidding. We don't really.
I like that. There's a humbleness about that.
Well, the other thing is too. It is a little. And look, I will admit some of my issues. But when I have a dinner party and someone's coming to my house, and for the most part, I've made the meal. You know, I feel like I have to put the best meal out there. If I'm going to a dinner party and I'm making the meal and we screw it up together or it's not perfect together, you don't have the same pressure.
Right.
That's very true.
You know, it's not like going to a fine dining restaurant. You wouldn't accept something mediocre there, but you would accept something mediocre if you and a bunch of people you never met before had just cracked up while you were making it. You know, it's a different.
Yeah.
It's the experience versus the food.
Yeah.
And if
you
can turn your dinner party into an experience versus the food by using some of the tips that Anne just said,
except my husband won't even go to fondue. So what? I'm going to invite the dinner party over and tell everyone they have to cook their own food? Can you imagine where that would go? I'm not doing that. Look, we came to the dinner party not to cook the food. I was here to eat the food.
Well, I was going to say, he can watch sports, but everyone else that you invite over can be in the kitchen drinking wine. Someone can take over the grill. Someone can be the top chef. I mean, open up the kitchen and take the pressure off. That's so funny because I'm always so far behind, and whenever I invite people over, that they're forced to help. I'm always like, yeah, jump right in. Here, help me with this, because I'm always way behind. So that helps, or is irresponsible, however you want to look at that.
Right.
Well, cool. And thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you. It was terrific. We had a great time.
Now, Megan, I don't know if you know this, but Anne and the Kitchen are hosting the first ever Columbus Food Swap at their space, because their space is absolutely awesome. So So I get to work with them soon on April 27th. Everyone mark your calendar for the
first.
The most awesome. Right. Just another event where we can focus on the fun with food and community, but also keep in mind those who don't have enough. So thank you, Anne, for opening up the kitchen to us and letting our event stop by.
Thank you.
Our event stopped by, all 40 or 50 or whatever. So I'm just going to be stopping by.
Just stop by, say hi. Anyway, thank you so much. You can read more about Anne and Jen at thekitchen.com, correct?
Thekitchencolumbus.com.
Thekitchencolumbus.com, yes. Look them up, find a meal, sign yourself up, plan a dinner party, get your guests, and give Anne a call. Sound good?
All right, I thought we wanted to give Anne a challenge, Trisha.
Oh, yeah, give it to her.
Okay. So, folks, it is not quite the 1st of April, but since we don't want to announce our monthly ingredient challenge on April Fool's Day because you might think we're joking, we decided to announce it today, and it is dates. So we are dating, and you should be too. So get some dates. Let's get started. And we want you to be dating also. So we'd like you to date at the kitchen. So we would like to challenge you and Jen to think about your menus in the month of April and see if you can't stick a few dates in one of your recipes and then take a pic, send it over, and let us know how it went with your guests.
Terrific. We will do that.
Awesome.
All right. You can get to the Flavor Bible to see what goes with dates.
Yeah.
And let us know.
Yeah, let us know because we're just getting started with our dates. Trisha, you know, has already started with her appetizer today with her bacon and dates, right?
Right, because everything goes with bacon, so I didn't need the flavor Bible for that.
Good point. You're so
moving forward, I will probably need the help of the flavor Bible.
Yeah.
I need one of those.
Yeah. Okay. So thank you, Anne. Thanks for the show and the conversation and the inspiration. We will look forward to hearing your fig experimentation.
Dates.
And I'm sure, dates. I keep doing, I always, figs and dates, I mean, I know they're different, but for some reason they are the same in my brain most of the time.
Yeah.
I don't get it. So I hope I cook the right stuff this month, everybody. Yeah. Bear with me. Okay. So, Anne, thanks again. And I will try to pop in next time I'm in Columbus. I would love to check it out.
Great. We'd love to see you. Thanks so much, guys.
All right. Bye-bye. All right, Trisha, so dates it is. We're not figging, we're dating. Got it.
Yeah, and I don't even think they're in season, but I saw them dried at my local store, and I just got intrigued by them. So, and I thought it is something that I think could somehow make it to an Easter table. So that's why Megan let me pick. The dating game, it's all my doing. I picked it. So
yeah,
I hope you like it. No,
I'm psyched though because I'm in love with that Jerusalem cookbook and it's going to be perfect to pull some recipes out of that. So I'm pretty psyched.
Yeah, good stuff. Okay, well I'm going to get these out of the oven soon here and make sure they're nice and crispy and serve them up to the family because I'm confident it's a sweet date and it's
got bacon.
The bacon.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. You heard it here. All right, folks, thanks for joining us today. Please don't hesitate ever to go to Facebook and check us out. We're always chatting it up on there. Twitter as well at No Chefs Allowed, or visit our website at nochefsallowed.com. We'd love to hear from you, and we would love for you to join in this date challenge with us. So get cooking, get eating, get buying some dates, folks, and join us. So, Trisha, until next Monday, it's fun cooking with you as always.
Yes, me too.
Okay.
I'll see you next week.
All right. Talk to y'all later. And so bye for now from No Chefs Allowed.
Good night.
Irene, good night. That's the song.